Move on to item number 5B, board governance. Mr. Melize.
Yep. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Vice Chair Hickel, members of the board, this is Jim Melize, staff legal counsel. This presentation is going to cover your core fiduciary duties as board members of the public retirement plans. I will cover who's a fiduciary, the law that's given rise to fiduciary duties, the general principles of your fiduciary duties, liabilities for breaches of those duties, as well as prevention and avoidance of these fiduciary liabilities. I know many of you have seen this quote from Franklin Delano Roosevelt's fourth inaugural address. It encapsulates how you as board members should approach your fiduciary duties. It reads, "We shall strive for perfection. We shall not achieve it immediately, but we shall still strive. We may make mistakes, but they must never be mistakes which result from the faintness of heart or abandonment of moral principle. As fiduciaries, we must strive for perfection. If mistakes are made, that's okay. But as fiduciaries, your decisions should never be made with failures of those ethical principles or prudence. Such errors in judgment would be to the detriment of our near 80,000 members of our retirement system." So who is a fiduciary? Well, clear definitions have been provided by the IRS, and a synthesis of the ones most relevant to us reads something like, a fiduciary is one who has discretionary authority or control over the administration of the plan, the management, or disposition of assets. Under this controlling IRS legal standard, members of this board are trustees over our retirement plans and are the highest level fiduciaries with the broadest responsibilities. Others may be fiduciaries too by contract or virtue of the work they perform. We have some internal staff like our executive director or legal counsel, or outside service providers like investment managers and plan consultants are also fiduciaries. Others like auditors generally are not. So why does it matter that you're a fiduciary? As stated by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, these duties are the highest known to law, and they require a heightened degree of care and responsibility from you as the dominant and trusted party, the trustees. This means that violations of these heightened duties carry with them significant legal exposure and liability. It's important to note that you're in fiduciary duties are embedded in the state constitution, Article 8, Section 15. Next. So what are the principles and sources of fiduciary law that apply to you as a board? Well, fiduciary law stems back to the common laws of trust, which can be traced all the way to the courts of England prior to our nation's founding. Public retirement systems and state investment boards, such as ours, are set up as trusts, which are distinct legal entities. The three parties involved with trusts are settlors, trustees, and beneficiaries. A settlor under trust law is the entity that creates the plan and determines what benefits are going to be distributed. The Montana legislature is a settlor of our plans. The trusts are overseen and managed by trustees, which are all of you. You're responsible for paying the benefits, making the investments, or handling both responsibilities. And finally, there are those to whom your fiduciary duties are owed. The beneficiaries, the recipients of the benefits provided from the trust. In 1974, Congress passed ERISA, which was formerly known as the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. It was established to regulate private sector employee benefit plans. The law established higher fiduciary standards than had existed for trust fund fiduciaries under the common law. Although ERISA does not technically apply to public pension plans like ours, it's very influential. It reflects relevant trust law, and its spirit is often followed by courts in the absence of a stated standard. In addition, many fiduciary standards of many public plans are modeled after ERISA. The Internal Revenue Code also provides important trust and fiduciary principles that must be adhered to by you as board members. Under these sources of law that apply to you as trustees, there are three key fiduciary duties that must always be adhered to. First, it is a duty of loyalty. which requires a steadfast commitment to stay focused on the interests of the members and beneficiaries of the retirement system. Second is the duty of prudence, which can also be known as the duty of care, and requires expertise and more than a good faith attempt to try to do the right thing. It can also be thought of as the duty to be informed. And third, the duty to follow the plan document. That means following the state laws and administrative rules that govern our retirement systems. The duty of loyalty for trustees was summarized by former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Benjamin Cardozo nearly 100 years ago. To paraphrase, a trustee is held to a higher moral standard than just honesty. Specifically, a trustee is held to the highest code of honor. Courts have been uncompromisingly rigid by demanding undivided loyalty to fiduciaries, from fiduciaries to those whom they owe a duty. As provided by the Internal Revenue Code, the duty of loyalty requires that fiduciaries act solely in the interest of the members and beneficiaries. This is known as the exclusive benefit rule, which always must be followed by this board. Montana law codifies this rule under 192.505, and it states, the assets of the retirement systems may not be used for or diverted to any purpose other than for the exclusive benefit of the members and their beneficiaries, and for paying the reasonable administrative expenses of the retirement systems administered by this board. Courts have interpreted this duty of loyalty to mean that you as board members can only wear one hat. You are not to act in your own self-interest or to balance the interests of outside parties. You may act only in the interests of the beneficiaries of the plan and the members. There may be those who expect you to represent them and be their advocates when you serve on the board. However, no fiduciary duty is owed to who appointed you, the local business community, taxpayers, the employers who contribute to the plan, or the legislature or the executive branch. The above outside parties are important components of our systems, but you do not owe a duty to them. And regardless of how you came to serve on this board, your fiduciary obligations are the same. As part of your fiduciary duty of loyalty, you must avoid conflicts of interest or even the appearance of conflicts. Under Montana ethics law, failing to avoid certain conflicts of interest or engaging in self-dealing or self-enrichment is an ethics violation which can result in civil fines and costs upon you for that breach of duty. If avoidance of such conflicts is impossible, you must disclose your conflicts properly and manage them to the best of your ability. That may mean recusing yourself from a vote or not being able to partake in activities that you would otherwise like to engage. Your fiduciary duty takes precedence over all other duties. And in addition, you must adhere to state ethics law and not accept gifts of substantial value. This would give the appearance of undue influence over board members, and it would be pretty easy to go over the statutory $100 limit, so it's best practice just to avoid it entirely. The laws are complex, so if in doubt as to whether you have a conflict of interest, please do not hesitate to reach out to legal counsel. Also encompassed in the duty of loyalty is the Internal Revenue Code's bar on prohibited transactions. More specifically, Internal Revenue Code Section 503A provides that a governmental plan such as ours may lose its tax-qualified status if it is deemed to have engaged in prohibited transactions as defined under that code. Generally, a prohibited transaction is between the qualified plan and a governmental sponsor or trustees, which involves a loan of assets to trustees, a purchase of securities for more than they're worth, selling of securities for less than they're worth, or any other transaction that would result in a diversion of trust assets. So final points on your duty of loyalty. It requires an unwavering commitment to act solely for the benefit of the trust, its members, and the beneficiaries. Disappointing others outside the pension fund is not nearly as serious or costly as violating the trust of the membership. The next duty of utmost importance is the duty of prudence. It requires sound judgment, sensibility, and caution. Federal courts have explained the test of prudence is not one of conduct, is one of conduct, not one of investment performance. The focus of the inquiry is how the fiduciary acted in the selection of the investment and not whether his investment succeeded or failed. So what is clear is that the fiduciary duty of prudence that applies to this board does not mean perfection. What courts expect for you as a board is for you to be properly informed in carrying out your duties. So prudence, not perfection, is required. In the words of one federal court, a pure heart and an empty mind are not enough. However, pure, thorough, scrupulous, and well-documented processes will protect you as fiduciaries under this duty and prevent you from inadvertently going astray. You must be prudent experts. As echoed under ERISA, the prudent standard is not that of a prudent layperson. Rather, you must act with the requisite knowledge and expertise of someone who is similarly situated. If you're not an expert on a particular subject matter, you are either to become one or find an expert to advise you. Your adherence to the duty of prudence will be measured against that of your peer groups at other retirement systems. And within this duty of prudence, there is a sub-duty of delegation that applies to you as trustees. This duty attaches to all duties that you as a board decide to delegate to third parties. So what does this mean as a board? It means that if you're going to delegate your duties, the duty of prudence requires you to be prudent when you decide to delegate, to whom you delegate, how you delegate the task, and how you supervise that delegation. The duty of prudence also requires you to be prudent with plan administrative expenses. Expenses must only be used for the administration of plans and not for settler functions. It's important to keep in mind that reasonable does not mean least expensive. There's no need to be skimpy to the detriment of your prudence. Some of the biggest expenses that we face are often multi-year technology agreements and investment management fees, and these are not insignificant. So final points on your duty of prudence. Careful, thorough, and scrupulous behavior is expected of you and your staff here at Impero. From a legal perspective, good decision-making is more important than a good outcome. Remember, you're not expected to be perfect, but you are expected to be prudent. The last duty I'll cover is your duty to follow the plan documents. And this duty is espoused in ERISA and states, a fiduciary shall discharge his or her duties with respect to the plan in accordance with the documents and instruments governing the plan, insofar as such documents and instruments are consistent with the provisions of ERISA or the Internal Revenue Code. The plan documents for our public pension fund consist of the statutes and administrative rules containing benefit provisions, investment parameters, and organizational restrictions. Obscure state laws and federal laws such as the Internal Revenue Code must be followed even if they're not specifically mentioned in our statutes and rules. Now, our statutes are usually clear, but sometimes ambiguities exist or necessary details are left out. When those ambiguities exist and further legal input is needed, it can be provided by the state attorney general, inside in-house legal counsel, or retained outside legal counsel. It's also important for this board to follow precedents. Existing interpretation of board policies and procedures and past standards of practice must come into play. Following the plan document can be challenging because it may appear some laws are not in the best interest of a particular member in a particular situation. However, trustees must realize that a member's best interest does not mean being advocate for an individual, or rather acting under the law impartially and for the best interest of all the members and beneficiaries. And a board cannot violate or intentionally misinterpret statutes. Further, this board must be reasonable and cannot be arbitrary and capricious in its decision-making. Essentially, you can't be unpredictable and illogical. Each of you must act as neutral decision-makers when exercising your quasi-judicial responsibilities. So, final point on your duty to follow the plan documents. The interplay between the state constitution, state and federal law, and administrative rules can be confusing. Frequently, the boards of trustees find any legal interpretation of plan documents in order to comply with them. Do not hesitate to seek guidance from legal staff when needed. You also must be aware that the laws governing public fund fiduciaries may impose liability to a breach of duty by you. Penalties for failing to adhere to fiduciary responsibilities can include personal liability to restore any losses to the plan resulting from a breach, liability to restore any profits to the plan which have been made through the use of plan assets, and civil penalties, criminal fines, or even imprisonment. As trustees, if you act within the scope of your responsibility, you may be protected. But if acting outside the scope, protection is rarely afforded, even through insurance. A vitally important concept you must all be aware of is co-fiduciary liability, which essentially means that you are your brother's or sister's keeper. A fiduciary, such as yourself, has a duty to speak up and take reasonable steps to prevent or halt a co-fiduciary's breach. It's important to note that resignation from this board is usually not sufficient to save you from liability if you don't speak up. Silence is complicity. Think of co-fiduciary liability as the duty to speak up. So how do you as a board avoid fiduciary liability? I've distilled what I believe to be the important key concepts to do that. Thoughtfully establish and carefully document prudent processes. Maintain a good governance structure with a thorough decision-making process, rigorous risk identification and management, and clearly defined roles and responsibilities. When delegating duties, perform ongoing oversight, establish appropriate reporting and disclosure, and follow the policies and processes you have in place, and periodically review those policies and processes if needed. You should also obtain independent expert advice when needed. If I had to boil this presentation down to one slide as a takeaway for this board, it would be to always remember to ask yourself these three questions. Under the duty of loyalty, can I be objective in reaching my decision? Under the duty of prudence, am I armed with the necessary information or expertise to make a decision? And also under the duty of prudence, is there a clear procedure or process that I should be following in my decision making? In closing, this board must use informed judgment and act in the overall best interest of the system members and beneficiaries in a manner that is consistent with applicable laws when exercising its authority over the administration of the systems. The board's actions must be rationally related to the information presented to it. With that, my presentation is complete. However, I realize that this is a lot, so please don't hesitate to ask questions of me or to Council Dmitrovich if you have any questions. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Malizia. Any questions? Regarding the presentation that we the very good presentation that we just heard.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Mr. Gold, yeah.
So when it comes to the board and the board of investment, we're all fiduciaries, right?
Correct.
How about like Executive Director Swindon and Executive Director Bill the same?
Yes. Trustee Gold, executive staff are fiduciaries, legal counsel. Our investment managers, our actuaries would certainly be fiduciaries. And then if we retain outside legal counsel, that type of thing. All owe a fiduciary obligation to the members.
Just turn a couple more.
Oh, proceed.
Is there, in recent history or even back 20 years, has there ever been a disagreement over asset allocation between this board and the board of investment? And if so, how do you handle it?
I can say going back the last 10 years, since we've been here, we haven't had one. I'm not aware of one that took place prior to that, Dave. But, ultimately, legally speaking, the board of investments is statutorily given the power to make that asset allocation. So that would be an interesting butting of heads there, I think, if that were to take place.
I wasn't planning on it. I was just curious.
Similarly, is an interesting question.
Yeah. Similarly, your role is to set the rate of investment return that is required for them to get. They don't get to choose that. You as the board get to choose that with the actuarial expertise at your guidance.
And then last, how does this fiduciary responsibility that we have transfer if we're hiring an independent company or advisor? How does that work? And is there a process that we go through for that? Or do we just assume that they're qualified because they're got a card or something?
Vice Chair Hickel, Trustee Galt, that would be part of that duty of delegation where we're going to vet an outside resource who's bringing that expertise that we'd otherwise have to educate ourselves on. And we do go through that education process for ourselves, but you have full-time investment managers who we might be handing off the management of the DC plan or the 457 plan to. Or if there is a unique tax law issue at hand, we have National Tax Counsel that we'll reach out to and confer with and say, hey, are our understandings proper here given the volume of case law that you come across and deal with on a regular basis?
Okay. For example, our actuaries are selected through an RFP process, and then we hire another actuarial firm to audit them on an ongoing basis. And so they clearly understand their role as a fiduciary, and then we provide oversight to make sure that that's clear.
Would you explain the process that you follow, Director Schwinden, as far as selecting your investment management firm or advisors?
Sure. Mr. Vice Chair, members of the board, we have, under statute, as many of you know, the Employee Investment Advisory Council, and we have retained R.B. Coons as our outside investment consultant, who has only provides investment consulting services to public pension funds across the country. And we work side by side with them to identify investment managers. We vet them. We spend about a year, as you know, going through various ones with the lineup changes that are coming down the pike. We look at performance, we look at fees, we look at how they measure up in terms of benchmarks, we look at how they're going to fit into the lineup in terms of asset allocation accruals that we're hoping participants can receive. I would say quarterly, we're constantly doing a quarterly market performance review of all of our managers. And so it's an ongoing process. The four new ones we picked that are going to be implemented into the lineup, it took about a good solid year of scrutiny to make sure they were the right ones. And those recommendations were made to EAC and then to the full board here after that for final approval. So it's not just I like that fun, let's pick it. Yeah.
Vice Chair Hickel, Trustee Galt, and also to follow up on that, We have many processes that are going to go through the RFP process and be vetted in that formal manner. But even ones that are less structured, say looking at outside legal counsel for certain matters, we're going through and looking at the competitors in that area. What are the outcomes that they might have and the approach that they're taking and conferring internally amongst all the fiduciaries here and then eventually bring it to you for oversight when needed.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you. Thank you, Jim, for that presentation and for that information. You know, it's valuable information for us to take. We're right on track, as far as the agenda is concerned.